This is Persona Grata, the official podcast of the Israel Ministry of Foreign Affairs. I'm your host, Tamar Schwartzbard.
Protocol, of course, is based on the Greek word for glue. The protocol is the glue that sticks the system together.
With 88 foreign embassies in Israel, a diplomatic community which numbers 5,000, and hundreds of visits to Israel by prime ministers, presidents, and ministers annually, there's no such thing as a quiet day for the Israel MFA's protocol and official guest bureau. The bureau handles everything from hotel bookings to official ceremonies for the world's most powerful leaders to catering to foreign diplomats' daily needs. The man behind the MFA's one-stop shop for foreign diplomats and dignitaries, Miron Rubin, the Chief of State Protocol of the State of Israel. So what happens when a foreign diplomat staff are caught smuggling weapons? And how can cultural etiquette prevent diplomatic faux pas? All this and more on this week's episode of Persona Grata. Hi, Miron. Thank you so much for joining us today. You have a really, really interesting job, and I'm very much looking forward to learning more about it. You've been in this career for quite a while. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, with pleasure. I have been in the ministry for more than 3 decades.
Wow.
I started in 1988. Sometimes it looks like just yesterday, but other times I say to myself, wow, it's already over 30 years.
Which countries have you served in?
Well, it's the usual Ministry of Foreign Affairs. If you speak English, they'll send you to South America. If you speak Chinese, they'll send you to Africa.
They want to keep you on your toes.
They want to keep us on my toes. And so actually I have had a Western Hemisphere service, which is very interesting because I didn't know Spanish when I came to the ministry. I knew English, Hebrew, of course, smattering of Arabic and French, and I have served over the years in Chile, Mexico, Paraguay, Bolivia, Colombia,
wow,
and the United Nations in New York. So it's actually been an eye-opener for me, and I've fallen in love, of course, with Latin American culture.
How long have you been the head of the Protocol and Official Guest Bureau?
I've been Chief of State Protocol since 2015.
Okay.
And I will soon be celebrating 4 years in my position.
What exactly does your department do?
The Protocol and Official Guests Bureau, as we are officially called, is made up of 4 different departments.
Okay.
We have the protocol department, we have the official guests department, we have the administration department, and we have the official documents department. Our administration department in the ministry single-handedly deals with more than 25% of the payments that leave this ministry and nearly 30% of the reservations that are made by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in one small department. So that's really quite incredible. I would like to start with the protocol department, or more privileges and immunities of the diplomats. The protocol department is the mainstay of the Protocol and Official Guests Bureau. The basis of the department is receiving the ambassador,
okay,
helping him present credentials to the president,
okay,
issuing diplomatic IDs, making sure that the welfare of the diplomat is okay, as well as ceremonies, and of course during official visits of different presidents, prime ministers and foreign ministers, and if there are ceremonies involved, then the running of those ceremonies.
So give us an example of one of your, I guess, biggest state visits. From beginning to end, when you first receive an email that a visitor is coming until after they leave, walk us through what this looks like step by step.
Well, first and foremost, we get either a request from the country who wishes to visit us, or our president or our prime minister will send an official invitation to the dignitary and ask them to come to the State of Israel. Once we find a date, then we sit down and we start talking shop. We have specific packages. Okay. Sometimes there will be extra requests. If, for example, a leader is a little bit frail when it comes to health, they will request an ambulance, and we'll have to see the availability and the ability to coordinate it with ambulance services. If they want to have reciprocity, they say, well, when your president came to our country, we gave him A, B, and C, so we would very much like to have A, B, and C in your country. So, yes, we then choose hotels. Then, of course, we start with the size of the delegation. We do not cover the costs of all of the delegations. We only cover the cost of a specific portion of the delegation. Okay. Sometimes in smaller countries, it's enough to cover the whole delegation, but usually it's not. Usually the number of rooms run into tens of rooms, like 30, 40, and you can even have a big visit, like a presidential visit of President Trump, who came to Israel with a staff of more than 2,000 people.
Oh, wow.
As I mentioned, we have 200 to 300 wow. visits a year. We're talking about 50 to 70 visits of very, very high level people. So divide that in 365 days, take off weekends, holidays, etc. You can see how busy we are just on those visits. For example, this week we started with the Italian foreign minister, followed a day later by the Prime Minister of Lithuania, and this morning the President of Malta. She arrived as well. So they're all three of them running around Israel at the same time, and all have different programs, and this is just the beginning of the week.
And but logistically, are you planning their meetings as well?
How we plan their meetings, we plan the timings, we plan wow. what has to be done. If it's a first-time visit as president or prime minister, there are specific things that the protocol of the State of Israel requests.
Okay.
And that is, of course, laying a wreath on Mount Herzl, visiting Yad Vashem and laying a wreath also in Yad Vashem. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's everything. You know, you've got to think of the security that comes, and if they're coming armed or not armed, then you've got to coordinate everything with the police and get them licenses for their guns. I mean, it goes down to the very specifics of the number of the security that has. So yes, there are all sorts of things, even for mundane things such as a suitcase, you have to be prepared for all sorts of things.
You're basically a one-stop shop for everything that they need.
We are, to a certain extent, a one-stop shop. You need to have a one-stop shop mm-hmm. because otherwise it gets too difficult to coordinate.
So your job is very much 24/7.
My job is very much 24/7. It means going to the airport at 4 in the morning or at 11 at night if the dignitary arrives at an ungodly hour. And then joining specific parts of the visit.
How big is your staff?
That's a state secret. Otherwise, people wouldn't believe that we're doing what we're doing on that amount of staff. So I'd prefer to say not, but it's definitely you can count on. It depends. Each department can easily be counted on two hands.
Wow. Let's talk a little bit about the diplomats. What are some of the privileges that they receive while they're here?
They belong to a relatively elite group of some 5,000 people in the country.
Okay.
Who are given privileges like the ability to buy tax-free motor vehicles. Yeah, they can bring in their personal belongings without them being taxed. They can also send them out of the country. They do have specific things. There are even shops where they can buy things duty-free. And so there are specific and special privileges that they have as a diplomat, and these are, of course, in the international conventions and agreements that we have signed, and this is part and parcel of the diplomatic life around the world. But of course, going from one place to the other is not always so easy.
Yeah.
Because uprooting yourself every few years, and the average ambassador, average diplomat, moves every 3 to 4 years.
Wow. And these privileges are meant to make the process a little bit easier.
These privileges, they are based, of course, on privileges that were much greater in 100, 200, and 300
like
years
what?
Ago. like what? In the good old days, the ambassador, for example, had jurisdiction over his citizens who lived in a foreign country. So if, for example, there was a squabble between two French people over rights or over taxes or over payment, they didn't go to the local governance. They went to the French ambassador, who decided on their case.
Wow.
And the fact that protocol, of course, is based on the Greek word for glue, the protocol is the glue that sticks the system together.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is something very important, because without protocol, you don't have a basis.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we come in, because we help with the rules and regulations of what can be done, what can't be done. The protocol department also deals with the welfare of diplomats. Now, the welfare of diplomats can sometimes be a very delicate subject, where we have to involve different government ministries, whether it's the municipality or whether it is the Ministry of Education or whether it is even the police. I'm not talking only about robberies or petty theft or mm-hmm. or problems with schools and things like that, or learning disabilities. I'm also talking about things like the welfare of children. I'm talking about problems with diplomats, and diplomats are human beings like everybody else, and they sometimes have problems or cause problems, and there are certain things that when you live in a country, you have to live up to the rules and regulations, so there's no drunk driving and there is no other things that can be a lot more delicate. Sometimes you have to know that diplomatic couriers or cars can be used to transport things, as we know, unfortunately, with the court case going on of a French member of the French consulate in Jerusalem, who is now being tried for gun running between the Gaza Strip and Israel and Judea and Samaria. So there are some very, very tough and difficult things that happen and have to be dealt with, especially and very quietly and very correctly and very cordially. Because of the privileges and the immunities that the diplomat has, you can't, for example, if you know that a car is smuggling contraband into the country, let's say from Jordan, you can't just check the car,
mm-hmm.
Because the car itself has immunity.
Wow.
And so you have to get or coordinate permission with the country involved to check the car.
You're responsible for and meeting some of the most powerful people in the world. Is it ever nerve-wracking for you?
No, because you'll find that they're all flesh and bones.
Mm-hmm.
And people are people. Sometimes a title will do something to a person. And so maybe you're president for X amount of years, but you go back to being yourself afterwards. So going back to, am I awed by particular people? I'm not awed by the title. I'm sometimes awed by the person. That is definitely. Sometimes you will have unbelievably incredible people whose ability transcends even the title that they have, and they really do impress you. And sometimes you can have a person with a title who impresses you a bit less.
So are there any leaders who have left a big impression on you?
I would definitely say that of the major leaders that I've had the honor to meet even briefly, I would say that Chancellor Merkel is definitely somebody who impresses me a lot. I think she is a really impressive and interesting world leader.
And what would you say were the most memorable visits you've experienced?
Well, one of the most interesting ones was, I think, when a state visit overstayed its time. One of the African presidents who was here on a state visit was meant to leave on a Thursday afternoon, and the luggage was being brought down, and then all of a sudden we realized that the suitcases of the president and his close entourage were not arriving in the lobby. They said, no, the president has decided to stay another day. So, of course, this makes quite a problem. But we try to cater to the necessities or the whims of some of the leaders. And in this case, it's very rare that something like this happens. But we accepted the change of plans, and we, of course, accompanied the president for another full day in Israel, which was something very, very interesting.
He just enjoyed himself so much that he wanted to stay.
He enjoyed himself so much that he wanted to stay another day and have time for himself instead of all these stuffy, maybe official meetings.
It's great for Israeli tourism.
It definitely is great for Israeli tourism.
Okay, so you have insight to some of the funnier and more embarrassing moments. So without alluding to any names, can you give us some examples?
No.
Really? Shoot. Okay, I'll have to ask you afterwards. In terms of cultures and etiquette, you're exposed to quite a lot of cultures from different countries. How do you prepare yourself in etiquette?
Well, some of it wouldn't say comes naturally, but comes with having been a diplomat for more than 3 decades, and you learn to understand sensitivities of different cultures. I would definitely try not to hug a Japanese, and things of what to do, and you will not cross your feet, for example. By doing that, you put the sole of your shoe in the face of a visitor, especially if he comes from a Middle Eastern or North African society.
Because that is insulting. As a veteran diplomat who's been in this career for quite a while, what would you say is the biggest lesson that you've learned from this experience?
To enjoy life. I think that's one of the most fascinating things about the job in the foreign ministry, that it is not boring. It's not an assembly line job. It never stays the same.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you are in a position that maybe you don't particularly like or enjoy, or you find it difficult, or you find it uninteresting, then within a very short time there will be another rotation and you will move to somewhere else. And I think that is one of the most fascinating things about the job.
I know you have a lot of work, so I'm going to let you get back to planning your next visit. Thank you so much for joining us today.
The pleasure's mine, and thank you for coming.
Listeners can follow Ambassador Rubin on Twitter at @AMBMaronRubin. Also, the Protocol and Official Guest Bureau recently unveiled a great new website where you can learn all about Israeli ambassadors around the world and foreign ambassadors to Israel. We'll include a link in the bio of this episode. Thank you all for joining us today, and a special thank you to Rivka Wapner for her help in editing this episode.